from the studios of 96.3 FM Freak Radio in Santa Cruz, California. It's time for the Weekly Freak Show. Headlines and highlights for the week ending Thursday, November 16th, 2000. My name's the V-Man, and I'll be your host for this half-hour look back at the news and features not heard in or glanced over by the corporate-controlled media. On this week's program, we'll hear from musician activist Diane Patterson and her partner Kelly about the plight of the Hopi and Diné people in their struggle against the Peabody Coal Company at Big Mountain in Arizona. And later, Professor Stephen Zunes discusses the recent non-violent overthrow of Slobodan Milosevic in Yugoslavia. All of that, plus this week's Spotlight Sound. Don't miss the Weekly Freak Show, coming up next. And now, headlines for the week ending Thursday, November 16th, 2000. A group of environmental activists calling itself the Matole Forest Defenders set out Friday, November 10th, to try and halt logging of the controversial Pacific Lumber Timber Harvest Plan 99-475 in the Matole River watershed in Humboldt County. The plan would clear-cut almost 50 acres of some of the last old-growth Douglas fir forest in California. Loggers showed up Friday, a day after a legal challenge failed in the state Supreme Court. By 4 p.m., the logging crews left after falling only one tree. However, two activists were pepper-sprayed by Humboldt County police who were in the area keeping protesters away from the loggers. While no arrests were made, police confiscated four backpacks, leaving the activists without their sleeping bags and warm clothes. The logging and protests are expected to continue. A demonstration against structural adjustment programs imposed by the International Monetary Fund drew nearly 70,000 people to the Turkish capital of Ankara on Saturday, November 11th. The protest was called by the Public Sector Workers Union Confederation, who are angry about IMF proposed cuts in pay. Turkish labor leaders are calling for a one-day general strike against the IMF's 2001 budget to take place on December 1st. Over 1,000 environmental protesters stormed police barricades in New Delhi, India, on Monday, November 14th. The demonstrators marched up to the offices of the World Bank, demanding to meet with visiting bank president James Wolfensohn. The World Bank has come under fire recently after the multinational lending agency seemed to change its position on a controversial dam project along the Narmada River that it earlier had declined to support. Protesters had threatened to block traffic for days if necessary until Wolfensohn agrees to meet with them. After being shut down by the Federal Communications Commission for the second time in 1 month, operators of Free Radio Austin found themselves in front of a federal judge on Monday, November 13th. Reckless and John, programmers of the station named in last week's warrant, appeared in front of what they described as a sympathetic judge. They were asked to name all parties involved in the unlicensed outfit, which they refused to do. Nearly 100 supporters of the station showed up to the hearing, in which the judge ultimately issued a preliminary injunction against radio transmissions on 97.1 FM. Station personnel vowed to appeal that decision. On the morning of Tuesday, November 14th, 23-year-old Josh Raisler Cohen staged a symbolic hanging inside the Fort Benning Military Reservation in Columbus, Georgia, site of the infamous School of the Americas. Cohen lowered himself off of an overpass in front of a banner which read, SOA Kills in Latin America. The action was a precursor to a mass gathering expected this weekend at the base. The School of the Americas trains up to 2,000 Latin American soldiers each year in combat skills, sniper training, and psychological operations. These tactics are primarily used by the soldiers on their own people, especially religious leaders, union organizers, and teachers. Cohen stated, "I'm here to shed the light of truth and public scrutiny on the School of the Americas, an institution whose record the Army wants to hide." Ruckus Society leader John Sellers appeared in a Philadelphia courtroom on Tuesday, November 14th, only to have the entire case against him dropped. Sellers was arrested on August 1st at the protests of the Republican National Convention and held on $1 million bail. In another case scheduled for that same day, Terrence McGuckin of ACT UP was convicted on 2 of 6 charges stemming from the August demonstrations. The prosecution's case contained virtually no evidence of criminal behavior. The sole witness for the prosecution was an off-duty detective from Washington, D.C., who claimed he saw McGuckin pointing, and the 10 or so people in his group moved in that direction. McGuckin was found guilty of disorderly conduct and obstructing a highway, though no evidence of this was presented. He was sentenced to 3 months probation and fined a total of $135.50. And finally, Greenpeace activists dumped 2 tons of Starlink contaminated corn in front of the San Francisco offices of the Environmental Protection Agency on Thursday, November 16th. The action was carried out to demand that the agency deny approval of the gene-altered corn for human consumption due to scientific concerns about potential health risks. Aventis, the corn's producer, had requested the temporary approval to offset costs approaching $1 billion from a recent recall of nearly 300 products from the nation's food supply. The Environmental Protection Agency is expected to issue a ruling in early December. And those were headlines for the week ending November 16th, 2000. On Friday, November 10th, a benefit was held in Santa Cruz, California, to raise money for the indigenous tribes at Big Mountain, facing relocation so the Peabody Coal Company can mine their land. Diane Patterson, a local musician, has been on tour raising consciousness around the struggles of the Sovereign Diné and Hopi peoples. She and her partner, Kelly, joined Freak Radio's The Fish for a discussion on their plight and what moves them to act on their behalf.
I would like to first start out by saying that I've read that the Navajo and the Hopi have been there about 1,000 years if not longer, and the Anasazi ruins are there from way back before that, and those are being dug and plowed under just for the ancient history. And then right now we know that the Navajo, which we'll call Diné, because they call themselves Diné, and the Navajo name came from the Spanish. So the Diné are there. What's happened is that they and the Hopi were coexisting peaceably for many generations. And then came the U.S. government putting up lines and deciding, you know, where they get to live, and setting up the reservation system after they'd already been first relocated to the Bosque Redondo, and that was, I think, in the 19th century. So now we have a situation where in the 70s, Peabody Coal wanted to begin mining. And so the U.S. government drew lines and called the area with the richest coal Hopi land, where mostly Navajo were living on it. And that was a political way to gain control of the land, because the U.S. government set up the Hopi Tribal Council system.
So-called.
And they call that, the native people there call those people the progressives, and they call those who still live with the land the traditionals. And so the progressives are running this whole tribal council system, which of course is like a puppet government of the U.S. government.
Yeah, are they, what about their involvement with the BIA and Bureau of Indian Affairs? I had heard something about how they were very, very closely interconnected. Do you guys have more information on that?
You know, the most I know about the BIA is that they had the same lawyer that was representing the Navajo, not the Diné, the Navajo tribal government was also involved in the BIA, and that was John Boyden. Well, and we know that if you're out at the Sundance at Big Mountain, then the BIA is one of the many law enforcement agencies that might be there checking your ID or harassing you or asking you why you're there. So, other than that, I don't know the politics on the BIA.
Okay, so I was interrupting you a little bit earlier. I guess you were saying how they had set up the Hopi Tribal Council and had the Diné people the Hopi people, they drew this line, this Hopi partition land, and they separated what was two tribes coexisting peaceably into two distinct and separate areas. Do you know, like, how they did this and what sort of tactics they used, or...
Some tactics that we've heard is physical removal, where someone comes to your hogan. It's the Hopi Rangers, the police hired by the Hopi Tribal Council, and they might take you, or they might bulldoze your house, and then you would quickly evacuate your house. Let's see. Yeah. Mostly those are direct stories that we've heard. As far as the politics, people are in court a lot trying to keep their land. And they've done a written thing, you know, besides the direct pulling people off, they've done the Relocation Act. And that was what set up the law that everyone had to get off the land. And then laws that supported that, like you cannot... repair your hogan anymore. You have a leaky roof, too bad. Oh, your family has extended with children and grandchildren, too bad. You can't build anymore. So people start leaving because they can't live. And the environment changes as well,
yeah.
Right? And becomes unlivable as the water table drops and the air gets worse and people have to leave.
Yeah, doesn't Peabody... have slurry lines that are depleting the water table really, really severely. I believe, is it shipped to Los Angeles, or is it shipped some like into Nevada? Or
into the Navajo Generating Station and the Mojave Generating Station. There are two, and one's in Southern California. I think one is a little north, so it must be in Nevada. Okay. Yeah, and they slurry 3 million gallons of this water a day.
Wow.
So
I couldn't even, like, conceive of that. It's like lakes, isn't it?
Yeah. They were dry farmers. They just, they grew the corn by just soaking the corn kernels until they'd sprout, and then they'd plant it in the ground and say a lot of prayers, and the corn would grow.
Yeah.
Without irrigation, but that relies on a nice high water table and that water that's been filtered through that incredible coal deposit, you know, for millions of years, and there it is, waiting to be drank, you know, by healthy humans. But it's being used to slurry coal and then just evaporated into the air, and it's gone.
So, what's the alternative for people who aren't fighting? Where do they go? Are they just supposed to vanish, or is there some other supposed reservation that they're being put onto, or what's going on?
Well, about 12,000 people have already been relocated to the new lands, which was, that location was downstream from the largest uranium spill in United States history. So they're not having any successes with people relocating to those areas into square homes. With no, these people are sheep herders, and they're used to having lots of acres and several states to roam and to live. And I should mention that Diane and myself are not experts on the details of the issue, but that we are driven by our instinct to know that what's happening there is not right, and that we know that there's technology and alternatives to mining the coal. And so keeping track of all the specifics on the issue is not our specialty. But serving the few people who are resisting relocation and resisting signing an accommodation agreement, humbly serving their efforts is really what we do. And we also travel year-round talking about the issue, singing about the issue, sharing information and updates that we get, and referring people to other people who might have more information.